You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm going to give you a little bit of background on what this show is and what it will become. Now, the reason I say it that way, The Tenants, in a general term, is a show, a podcast, aimed at educating newer players, people that are getting into ESO for the first time or are getting back into the game. Also appeals to people that have been playing but don't know all the little tips, tricks, and secrets that exist in this world. So, why do I make a fuss about opening this episode? Well, because we're actually recording this in May 16th of 2019, right before the launch of Elsewhere. But this episode initially aired in about September of 2018. So this is happening close to a little bit less than a year later. But we've gone back to the first one because in February 2019, with the Wrathstone update, Elder Scrolls Online added in new racial passives. Now, this episode you're about to listen to is one where we talk very roughly, very generally about what classes exist in Elder Scrolls Online and what the races do and why you might be interested in playing one over another. So we're going to keep this episode very general, but we want to give a little bit of background on ourselves. So I will throw it over and introduce Stark Realm. Hello, Stark. How are you?
Hey, pretty good.
Well, go ahead.
So I started playing Elder Scrolls Online during the public stress test betas back in 2014. So I've been around for a little while. And you started a bit more recently.
Yeah, I came in right after Somerset launched. So that would have been June 2018. So you got about, four more years in this game than I do. Is that right?
Yeah, about that.
So what we initially did when we made this show is I was streaming on Twitch, and since then we've become a Twitch partner and all kinds of great stuff due to the ESO community. But I was streaming on Twitch. I was learning the game. The community was so helpful. So at about 3 months into me playing the game, Stark and I had the idea that we would mesh his extreme knowledge of the game, having played, like we just said, 4 years longer than myself, me having questions that a new player would have. We worked these two things together in a way that, over the next couple of episodes, as you'll see, we talk you through all the basics of the game. We try and bring it from the most novice standpoint and work you guys up to being a full-fledged, very knowledgeable ESO player. And along this journey that you're going to hear over the next 30 some episodes, you're going to hear interviews with Rich Lambert, the creative director of the game, Mike Finnegan, the lead dungeon designer, and one of our personal amazing content creator friends, Zynode, who makes great builds. He's a YouTuber and an ESO streamer. So I think we have him back about three times at this point. We'll just dive right into some information, though, for you guys. So this is serving as episode number one and as episode 35. For those of you that know what's going on in the ESO universe right now, or people that want to catch up on some general news here, we have Elsewhere launching on May 20th as a pre-order. Kind of exclusive there. If you don't pre-order, or if you're playing on console, it will launch on June 4th. Now, if you don't already own a copy of it, you can look in the show notes or the description below. There's a great guide there, a buyer's guide that Stark and I created. And if you buy through there, it avoids Steam, who we think is the enemy. It tends to bar people from playing very easily. And if you buy through this link that we have, it's all Humble Bundle, so it avoids Steam. It helps dog rescues, so you're kicking back to charity at no extra money to you. One amazing thing to point out, on May 20th at noon Eastern time, we are doing a 24-hour stream over on twitch.tv/ Kyle Dempster Studios. This 24-hour stream, it's going to be a subathon sort of deal, and we've got sponsors lined up, one an hour, so there's going to be a prize every hour. Things like Elder Scrolls Online loot crates, Bethesda gear store gift cards, amazing stuff. It's like $50 value every hour, so if you guys are looking for something to do on Monday while you're playing through some new Elsewhere content, that's twitch.tv/ Kyle Dempster Studios. And Stark, let's just dive right into this episode. Let's knock it out of the park. Let's talk very generally about classes here. So you want to talk about like the expectations, the roles and things like that?
Yeah, so as with most MMOs, Elder Scrolls Online splits its classes, or none of the classes, but splits your player role in group content into DPS or damage, a damage-focused setup, into tanking, which is you step out in front, you take a lot of hits. And in the case of ESO, you're also expected to crowd control adds, because if you're familiar with tanking from other MMOs, Elder Scrolls Online doesn't have a soft taunt system or a general threat management system. We actually have a hard taunt system. So you poke somebody with a taunt and they will target you for the duration of that taunt, unless they have an ability that ignores that. And then finally, but because there's no area of effect taunts, you need to have some crowd control options to keep control of the adds and keep them off the DPS and the healer. And then as the healer, your primary job is to keep the other players alive. After that, it's helpful if members of the party are buffing each other and improving things. And a lot of times that does sort of fall into the tank or the healer, but really that can be anyone. So in very general sense, we do have a Trinity. But what's unique about ESO is all the classes have been designed to varying degrees to be able to fill each of the three roles, and they tend to do so in unique ways. Also, we have a little bit of a split with DPS, because any class can do what's called stamina DPS, which is your physical weapons and sort of your warrior type, or they can do magicka DPS, which is your mage and spell casting approach. So there's actually a lot of flexibility with the classes.
And that's something a lot of players, if you're just coming over from a game like World of Warcraft, this is very, very different. This is in games like WoW, it's usually like, hey, I want to play as a mage. Well, mage is only a damage dealer. But in this game, as you're going to hear in just a second, you can take our mage types, like our sorcerer and stuff like that. And like Stark just said, you can make that sorcerer into a tank, healer, or DPS. And you can make that sorcerer a melee style, like with swords and, and bows and stuff like that. Not your traditional approach to a sorcerer, per se. So let's take a look at very generally. Now, there are, well, as of May 20th, there will be 6 different classes in the game, 4 of which are part of the base game. Those would be the Dragon Knight, the Templar, the Sorcerer, and the Nightblade. With the introduction of Morrowind back in 2016, is that 16 or 17, Stark?
I think it was 17, actually.
I think you're right. I always think 16 for some reason. In 2017 came Morrowind, which brought the Warden class. Now, this thing is available as an account upgrade on the Crown store. So once you're in the game, you can buy access to the Warden for approximately like $15 US. So pretty good deal for how exciting of a class it is. And with the Elsweyr expansion comes the Necromancer class. So you would need to own Elsweyr to play as a Necromancer. Very general terms, the Dragon Knight, part of the base game again, is a fire-wielding knight for the most part, and they're pretty beefy, they're good at survival. A lot of their spells, and I'll call them spells because they have a lot of fire animations to them, their skills, a lot of their skills require your character to be in closer proximity than maybe other classes. They have things like a flame whip, and it's a very interesting class I've not really seen replicated in other games in a similar fashion.
Next. Also has the fun ability to grab enemies that are distanced and yank them over to you. So there is that too.
Yeah, that gives it a special piece of its toolkit that's geared towards tanking. So that's really nice for pulling in mobs and stuff like that, or PvP. We got the Templar, which is my personal favorite. This is very much your traditional paladin type class from other games. They are wielders of like holy light looking magic. They have good survival and good damage. This is the one I actually recommend a lot of the time, a Magicka Templar, for someone that's just getting their feet wet in the game, just because they're so survivable in combat. Like, they have ways to, if you go, like I said, the Magicka route, when they're using their spammable attacks, they can restore health while they're doing damage. So very forgiving for a new player. Moving on, go ahead. You want to say something?
I was going to say, yeah, actually, with the Templar, it does really epitomize the flexibility for classes, too, because you take the same class and you can run around in heavy armor. You've got your, like you said, a paladin type, where it's your heavy armor frontline fighter. You can, and that's for tanking, you can do a mage type, you know, you're casting spells and you're doing this as damage. You've got the healer setup, and then you can also do a sort of monster hunter, holy avenger type thing with medium armor as a stand build. So it's like, it really shows off what we've been talking about a minute ago with the flexibility. If you can pick different ways to approach it with a class, and really important with this, when you're looking at builds and things like that, this is one solution. There are a lot of ways to do any of these things with the class.
That's a great point. Moving on, we have our sorcerer next. This is, again, a very traditional sorcerer class from other games. They use lightning spells. They have some dark magic spells. And within, well, I should say next to the dark magic, kind of similar, they have the ability to summon Daedric pets. So that's pretty cool. This is our most extreme pet class in the game. Can they have three out at a time, Stark, or just two?
Three. They've got two that'll toggle on.
Yeah.
That's the Clan Fear or the Scamp and mm-hmm. then Twilight. But then they can drop one with the Star Mantra. So, yeah, they've got three pets.
Yeah, that's they're a very interesting role, especially it's always kind of interests me that you can make a, like we just said earlier, a melee style sorcerer. That's just so not common in many worlds that I've seen. But so if you can really do it here and excel with it, it's a major butt kicker class.
Yeah.
We next up have the Nightblade. They are a rogue type, but they use shadow and blood magic. So not only is it your traditional rogue, but they have the ability to siphon people's health to restore your own health or your party's health. It's a very interesting. They could also have a spell, a very powerful heal for them that can sacrifice their health to do a beefy heal on a party member. So very just different. And I think, Stark, when we were talking about this earlier, you mentioned this is the only class that has its own invisibility system.
Yeah. So normally to do this, and this is getting into the weeds a little bit, but normally when you want to get invisibility on a character, you need to do that through the use of potions and alchemy. And in the case of the Nightblade, no, they just straight up have a click ability that will let them go invisible for 2.5 seconds. So that's a really nice tool for you if you want to sneak around.
Especially if you want to get into some of those, we'll talk about these, you'll hear these in other episodes, but DLC like the Dark Brotherhood. I'm sure a lot of people coming into the game are fascinated by that and the Thieves Guild, and both of those require an element of stealth. So just keep in mind the Nightblade is particularly prone to that kind of behavior. And I see a note here saying they are fantastic at single target damage. That's
they
a good
really
point.
Are.
And I know great Nightblade tanks. I played a Nightblade healer, my first character run through. So again, mm-hmm. these things are, like, the classes are super flexible. You are going to see all over the internet that, you know, this class excels at this and this, the other. And it's true, certain of them have different toolkits that lend themselves more to it. Like, for example, the Templar has a whole healing tree. But truly, that is just a toolkit. It's all up to you, the player, to figure out what you work best at. Because someone out there on Reddit might be saying, Templars are the absolute best healers in the game. But you may log on a Templar and find you don't jive with them at all. And instead, you jive with a, I don't know, Nightblade healer. And maybe that is your claim to fame and you are the best Nightblade healer out there. So you gotta really experiment with these classes. Moving on here, we have, like I mentioned, the Warden, which is part of a Crown Store upgrade. They are, to me, a very druid-like class. Stark, you said they remind you of a ranger class. Is that right?
Yeah, they really do remind me of the rangers from D&D.
Because,
again, spell casting's there, so, yep.
And so this one, it's a druid, in to me, in the sense that it's all about earth magic. So they have a bear they can summon. They have, again, a healing tree dedicated to them. But these visuals are very nature-based. They're having mushrooms pop up under people's feet that heal them. They have trees that come up and heal vines and things like that. So to me, very druid-like. And they have a frost magic tree, which very much lends itself to a more tanky approach or very crowd control-y in PvP. So that's an interesting side of the Warden class here.
Yeah, there is one really critical difference mm-hmm. between the looking at the original four classes and looking at the two that have been added since. Because the original classes, you can get tools for playing each role however you want out of all three trees. And that's still kind of true with the Warden and the Necromancer, which we'll get to in a second. Mm-hmm. But these have very clear delineations on the skill line. So they're easier to pick up and go, okay, I want to do a tank Warden. I need to focus on this tree, as opposed to, okay, well, there's going to be stuff in all of these that are going to appeal to me for this. So that's just something to keep in mind going forward. Again, you can do everything with each class, but with these, it's a little easier to figure out what you're going to chase after.
I think that's a wonderful point. Let's talk about that for a brief second in comparison. Like you said, the warden, well, let's wrap the necromancer, because I think he is the epitome of seeing the difference. So the necromancer is extraordinarily true to the name. I mean, I feel like I could say necromancer, period. Full stop. Because I mean, he does what necromancers do. He can summon minions. He has graveyard style effects. He's got the scythe. And if you take him stamina, these turn into disease spells and things like that. But one really cool one that I don't know if you see in so many other games is the necromancer can turn himself into a bone colossus as an ultimate thing, which is very, very cool. And let's now take him, because again, he's the one that's releasing 2019 here. And like Stark just said, he's got three different trees. He's got a primarily damage dealing DPS tree. He has got a tank tree, and he has a healing tree. And in comparison, looking at other classes, maybe like, I mean, the Templar is one that has one dedicated healing tree. And then he has just two others that are kind of ambiguous, like they don't seem as geared. And maybe the sorcerer would be a great example of this too, because I, looking at a sorcerer, because I'm not a huge sorcerer player, I wouldn't be able to pick out many of their healing spells versus their damage
Sorc's an excellent example, because your primary spam heal is going to be the Winged Twilight, the Twilight Matriarch, and that's in Daedric Summoning.
I think the the Dragon Knight's really good at that too, right? Because they have some embedded heals in all the trees. Is that?
Yeah, but a lot of like those heals are self heals.
Yeah, like, and
got,
when you
start, got a couple of heals that will bounce over to other players. I can remember one of them, but I can't remember the name of it. But
yeah,
it's so what happens there is, and again, like the Sorc is a really good example of this, because you get your main heal out of the summoning tree, which, okay, that's weird. You've got an alt that provides a very nice heal, but that's over in dark magic. Sorry, an ultimate ability. These are high-end abilities you'll pick up. You actually get them fairly early on, but you're not going to be using them constantly. You'll use them when you need to.
Yeah.
So that's actually a really good example of this, because you're going to have to go hunting through the different sources to get the stuff that's useful. And it's even more pronounced when you look at Sorc tanks, because some of the stuff that's really useful is hiding over in the Lightning Tree. Some of it's in the Daedric Tree, and a lot of the passives that really benefit tanking in the Daedric Tree, and then all your crowd control is in dark magic. So it's like, it's a really strange one to look at and go, okay, well, there isn't one tree for this. You're pulling from everything.
Yep. I think that makes this game very different than I know, because it's been a while since I've played WoW. But over there, whenever you're choosing a class, they actually funnel you into a system where it's like you are choosing to be a healer, a tank, or a DPS if that class offers all three equally. And so you're only picking up abilities that are suited for that need. In ESO, it is likely that you will be taking all of your class abilities. And in fact, I recommend that. I recommend new players, instead of going straight to a guide, I recommend you guys go and just play the class. Go figure out what skills you like, figure out which ones you don't like, take them on and off of your weapon bar there, your combat bar. As you are getting into the game, just feel them out, because we should tell you before we move into the races section here that this game is extremely forgivable for new players, or forgiving. You can reset your attribute points, which are your health, stamina, or magicka. You can reset all of your skill points. You can reset your morphs, which are kind of a fork in the road for all of your skills. Usually it'll be, that's kind of like Stark said, when you're choosing magic or stamina, you'll see that your spells or your skill abilities are all usually going to start out with a magicka cost. But whenever you level those skills up, you'll have to split them between magicka or stamina or some different effects. You'll see per skill, it's different, but you can reset all of that. So there's no mistakes really that are, unfixable in ESO. So I want to encourage people to go out and get your hands dirty and figure out what you like. And when you're looking at all six of these classes, it is not a bad thing at all to play them each to about level 10 or level 20 and see what you jive with and what you don't. Also, keep in mind, if you're getting in the ESO, you're more than likely going to have a lot of characters on your account. So the first one you create is probably unlikely to be your last character, your very final character.
It's true.
I see a lot of that over on Twitch. I see people saying, I'm so stressed. I don't know what to pick. What do I do? And I'm like, well,
try them all.
You're going to do them all eventually. If not this month, 3 months from now, you'll probably have one of each character on your account. Not all max level, but, you know, at least try it out and experience. So
also another thing in that sense that not to stress about is your choice of alliance. If you don't have a specific upgrade, when you pick your race, you'll be locked into an alliance. That is only relevant for PvP. It will determine where the main story sends you. So like when you initially roll up a character, if you immediately go back and you start the original main story, which we'll sometime eventually explain how to do, that will determine where you go initially, but it doesn't actually lock you in anymore. So it used to be like, oh yeah, this is the PvE content you have. These are the players you'll be running with. That's not true anymore. You can mix and mingle however you want now. So that is actually a very light stress choice. It doesn't matter much unless you actually want to engage in PvP a lot.
Great point. And I guess we should use this time. I mean, I don't remember way back to when we first created this episode if we talked about this, but that is a good thing to a fear to get rid of. Like people that played back in 2014 and maybe you're just looking to rejoin now that there's a necromancer or something like that. You should note that, like Stark said, alliances, choosing your faction as alliances are Daggerfall Covenant, Aldmeri Dominion, and Ebonheart Pact, if I can actually talk today. Those three factions are only important if you're in Cyrodiil, the open world PvP zone. That's the only, like Stark said, they affect where your main quest starts, but not more than that. Like it doesn't affect your PvEing. You can still go quest with friends of any level in any zone, as long as you actually have access to that zone via DLC or expansion. But you can go anywhere and do anything like that. It's not like the old days. When this game first came out, it had faction-specific zones, much like your World of Warcraft and stuff like that. So this
also
is...
It also had level-ranged zones back then. Yeah. Like Stonefalls and Glenumbra and Aradon were like 1 to 15. And so like that used to be a thing too, and that's gone as well.
It's a very nice time to get in. Again, if you want your friend, let's say you got to level 20 and you just got your friend to buy themselves a copy of the game, they can immediately come in and play with you regardless of your level versus theirs. As soon as they are out of that tutorial, they are fair game to be taken on questing sort of things or anything like that. So please, 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 great time to get in and enjoy. Without further ado, Stark, let's run down these races in the most generic sense that we can. Do you want to go every other here when we go through them?
Yeah, sure, we can do that.
Okay.
You want to go first?
Sure, let me do that. Actually, no, you go first, because I want the Breton.
Okay, so we fight over that. Something important to understand with your race, when you first start a character, you're not going to see anything related to your race that would indicate it has play effect. It does. These passives unlock at level 5 and then progressively unlock as you progress through the game. So there is actually a change between your races. That said, it's not particularly severe, and it is something where it's like, if you want to play a character of a specific race, you're not going to be seriously punished for picking the wrong race, even if some players will look at you funny. So if you're not worried about that, you're good. Okay, so let's start off with this. First one on the list are the High Elves. These are Dominion race. These are powerful magic casters, and you can use them for tanking. You can use them for anything, really, including healing. But they really excel at just putting out a lot of magicka.
Yeah. Is that all you want to say for them? Or do you,
that's all I want to say. Like, it's pretty straightforward. Like, this is, we can keep this very clean, very short.
I was waiting for the next line there.
Nope.
The Argonian, your reptilian race, they are, as Stark calls them, potion addicts. They get buffs to using potions. They have improved healing and knowledge of healing staves, which is not as large as that might sound. You'll see some of these races, by the way. I think all of them have a 15% like bonus to learning a weapon. That doesn't actually equal out being that impressive. As a new player, I know that might sound like, ooh, 15% better at restoration staves. That's what I need. Honestly, you're not going to notice that.
Yeah, that's okay, so that's just your experience gains for that skill line.
Yep.
And because your weapon skills and armor skills all stop at level 50, like they hit at 50 and you're done, you've got access to everything in that skill line, it doesn't really matter. It's useful for just getting your first steps forward. So if you're looking at something and it's like, okay, well, I want to do this first, I don't know what I'm doing at all, cool, but don't stress about that, especially if you're like, I want to play this and that doesn't match what I'm seeing on the skill list here. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's definitely something to keep in mind. And finally, the Argonians have a 50% swim speed increase, which is a kind of unique little niche, whatever. It's just fun and kind of goofy. So if you like swimming, there you go.
Yeah, almost all the races have some weird little unique quirks.
Yeah, that's the word for it.
Yeah. And the swim speed is one of those. There's nothing really equivalent to it from anybody else. Uh-uh. A lot of them tend to be, but, you know, because we'll get to stuff like the Nord later.
Yeah.
That's unique. But
And you're never going to be swimming in combat in a meaningful way or anything like that. This game doesn't have underwater swimming like some other MMOs. So really, again, it's just for fun.
Also, since you didn't cover it, the short answer with the Argonians, what can you do with them?
Oh,
whatever.
Yeah.
You want. They're actually pretty balanced stat-wise, so don't worry too much about that. They are very popular as tanks, though.
Yeah.
Because of that potion passive.
Yep.
Okay, so moving on to the Wood Elves, we've got the primary function with them is actually stealth detection. Used to be they had a sneak bonus that was reworked into a stealth detection bonus. They're still a pretty decent choice if you want to run a character that is a stam-based character. Like if you're wanting to play a sneaky archer type, you can still do that with a wood elf. It still works fine. It's just, it's one of the few races where I'll go, I'm not really thrilled with their current state, but life goes on. If you dig them, if you want to play a wood elf, have fun. They're still a legitimate choice.
Up next is the Breton, my personal favorite. I've been playing them since I first launched the game. They are great magic wielders. They have a reduced spell cost, which really makes them stand out as healers in particular, though, again, can fill any role. But you're going to look at Bretons if you want to do, like I said, heals. I'm going to use mine as a necromancer here in a hot minute for both magic and DPS and for healing. And I know people that just do Bretons all the time, even as a stam character. They also have some reductions to like damage and things like that, or effects from spells and stuff.
Yeah, they have a spell resist buff. Yeah. So that's actually really nice.
That leaves you with Dark Elves.
Dark Elves are really fun. So these are one of the races that's currently set up. They're very balanced. They'll buff either magicka or stamina equally. And so depending on what you want to do, if you want to do a character that's, you know, sneaky assassin type, you want to do a mage, or you're not sure which and you might want to change it down the road, Dark Elves are a great pick for that. The one thing I would caution against is trying to do both at the same time on the same character.
Oh, yeah.
That tends to underperform, unfortunately.
Hybrid.
And this is, yeah, and this is a race that looks like that's a really good option when it still isn't, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe that's a quick aside to say two very general answers. Can you do hybrid? Yes. Will it perform well? No.
One caveat on that. It can perform pretty well in PvP if you know what you're doing. But that's a very specific case.
Yeah, that's like 0.1% of our listeners out there will be able to fully take advantage of that, in all fairness. Meaning, I think in my year of playing, I've seen one person tout the greatness of a hybrid build. Like you said, they can exist. Should a beginner player do it? Absolutely not. Mm-mm. Khajiits are up next, though, in our list. And you guys, this is Khajiits are a fan favorite because they have a very distinct speech pattern, aesthetic. They just have a big history to them in the community. And you guys are going to be highlighted in elsewhere because we're going to the homeland of the Khajiit. Because of that, some of these recent changes, I think, have made them. They used to be what majorly stamina classes, but now their crit damage now applies to both stamina and magicka. So a lot of people that want to go with high crit style gameplay will find Khajiits very interesting as well, because of their lore as being kind of natural thieves and not being able to keep their paws to themselves. They have an improved sneak. So if you're looking to go sneaky, you might consider a Khajiit for that style.
It's funny you mention that, though, because they've also got an increased chance to pickpocket things. That's their unique quirk, sort of like the Argonian speed thing. Like, they can steal your stuff. A quick thing about pickpocketing, though, you can only pickpocket NPCs. This isn't a situation where it's like some player can wander by and pilfer stuff out of your pockets.
Right, right. It does lend them, again, like I mentioned earlier, if you're someone that wants to do Thieves Guild stuff or Dark Brotherhood, you usually kill them and move on. But if you want to pick their pockets before you murder them, you might want to play a Khajiit. But again, all of these races can do everything. Want to talk to us a little bit about the Nords, Dark?
Well, they're exceptional at staying drunk.
That's true.
The Nord are actually a really neat race now. So and I remember this the last time. What I said was basically their job is to get slapped around, punched in the face, and not really notice. That's changed a little bit now. So we mentioned ultimates in passing briefly, and these are very powerful abilities you can activate occasionally. The Nords now have an ability where as they're taking damage, they will generate ultimate passively. So that sort of fits in. If you're coming out of Skyrim, it's the ultimates are not completely unanalogous to the sort of timer you had on the Dragon Shouts. Now, there are no shouts. You can't use shouts as ultimates. That's not a thing. But it's that same sort of you use an ability, and then as you're playing, you'll generate ultimate and get that ability back up and be able to use it again, but not immediately. And Nords now actually regenerate ultimate over time, like from taking damage. So it does make them really appealing as a racial pick for a number of situations. They're still a really great race if you want to play tanks, though.
Yeah.
They're healthy. They've got a lot of stam. They'll take a beating and they'll keep going and they won't know what you did to them afterwards. Yeah. But yeah.
And I like how you said that with the ultimate. If you're coming from a game, again, I'm calling out WoW because I used to play it, but the ultimates in this game are similar to like their 3 or more minute spells. So they used to have 3 or more minute cooldowns on things. ESO is not a game of cooldowns, but it's instead a game of generation. So like you're generating ultimate to then cast this ability. So just think of it that way. It's one of your big, massive either attacks, heals, tank things, something like that. Up next on the list is one that I don't play very often. Actually, I don't think I've ever rolled an orc before on ESO. But the orc is a very much a berserker type of class, and a lot of their abilities kind of lend to it. They get some increased weapon damage. They get some reduced cost to their sprinting, so they can kind of really be running through the battlefield attacking. Get some extra healing when they do damage. It's a really interesting class. A lot of people, I think, are happy with this more recent change to them. Is that what you've heard, Stark?
Yeah, it's still orcs are still a really popular choice in some quarters for PvP. Mm-hmm. They're still a really good choice for PvP in general, the way they're set up.
Yeah.
That's the bulk of it for the one I've seen.
Excellent. Tell us about the Red Guard.
So the Red Guard are fun. They are primarily a stam focused race. Like you'll see players running them in stam builds. They're a sort of proud noble warrior race from the deserts of the Alakir. And what they've got that's really neat is they can regenerate spent stamina very quickly from dealing damage. So this creates situations where you can get absolutely ludicrous amounts of resources back. That's not as powerful as it might sound, because again, as you just mentioned a minute ago, this is a game about generation. Mm-hmm. So this is about your ability to use your abilities constantly. And if you can't do that normally, this can help you, but it won't make you stronger per se.
Finally, on our list for today, we have the Imperial. Now, this is a race that you do need to use an account upgrade to get. He came in with originally DLC, but now it's called an account upgrade. So if you want to go to the Crown store, you can find him by just searching Imperial. You'll know this race primarily from living in Cyrodiil. And if you played Oblivion, you know, big focus on Imperials there. Also, a huge Imperial presence in Skyrim if you did that. Imperials are known for having some extra gold generation, but it's not as much as you might think. They have some extra stamina and health, so they're, you know, they do lend themselves to a little bit more stamina play than Magicka. And they have an ability that's really cool called Red Diamond. So when you deal damage, you restore some health, Magicka, and stamina. So that's a really unique thing for them in combat. And that, but you do a lot of Imperials, right, Stark?
Yeah, mostly for tanking or for stam DPS. The stat pools. So one of the things that was changed, they changed the way that the stat bonuses were calculated. Before that, the stat bonuses were kind of crazy. Now they've normalized the system for that. And it doesn't tend to be as insane, but it's still some really beefy stat modifiers. And to be fair, you can actually get comparable stat modifiers for any for some of the other races. And there's no longer this system where it's like, okay, I've got a lot of points in this attribute, therefore the bonus will be even larger. But yeah, no, it's a really good race for stam, for tanking, and also for werewolves, which we'll get into down the line. So Imperials are really nice. I will point out it's not a pay to win system. Like this will not make you absurdly powerful. It simply focuses in an area you don't get from another race. Like if you're playing a Red Guard, you'll have a similar amount of max stam increase, but you will not have the health increase, and that won't matter as much because you're probably not as worried about your health. Similarly, if you're rolling a Nord, you're going to have as much health and nearly as much stam, but you'll also have damage resistance bonuses, and you'll have your alt gen instead of getting the self-heal and getting the cost reduction that's tied in for the Imperial. So it's like, it's all a little complicated, but it's not overpowered. It is, however, a really good race for tanking.
Yes, I love what you said. We have a little bit of time here at the end to maybe throw some kind of topping off sort of things at people that are brand new to the game. I think that's great what you said. ESO is not a pay-to-win game. We do have a huge cash shop available, but it is all pay to look pretty, and there is some pay for convenience things, but none of it change. None of it's going to give someone an upper edge in PvE content or PvP content. And I think, Stark, I think it's you that likes to say the food and drink that you can buy off the crown store is actually weaker than things you can craft. Is that right?
It is. Yeah, it is.
So there are some convenience things. Are there any? Oh, let's tell people really quickly a pitfall on the crown store that we see people falling for, kind of a quote unquote noob trap, would be don't buy vampirism or werewolf off of there. Now, there's a whole episode about what it means to be a vampire and werewolf. So I encourage you, if you want to hear that, go listen through the list. P.S. The next couple podcasts are actually built in a way that they're meant to be listened to in order. So although you totally can skip around, you may find that if you skip from episode 1 to episode 20, that you've missed out on a lot of building blocks along the way. So do that at your own risk. But I think it's actually only like episode 6 or something that we talked vampires.
But yeah, it was pretty early on.
Yeah.
That was also a fairly self-contained episode, as I recall. Like, that was tied in with Halloween as sort of a gag, so.
I think you're right. And, that's exactly what it was. I'm going to find the number here as this loads off the website. But, just don't fall for, it's not episode 6. Episode 9, Vampires and Werewolves.
We were very close.
Very close. So I would just recommend not buying off the crown store. It's pretty expensive there when you could just join a guild like the one that I have that you can find an application for in the links below. People there often extremely happy to just give you a vampire or werewolf bite, as they call it, and that will turn you into one. That's a much easier approach. Some people fall for the $15 thing on the store, but we don't want you to do that. We want to help you out. Any other sort of things like that, Stark? Let's throw a couple at them. Beginner tips.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is you will get a mount when you get to level 10 for free. And that's an account-wide unlock. So all of your characters get access to a mount basically from character creation after that. The other thing is stuff like the mount upgrades you can buy on the store. That just replicates a system. You can buy those same upgrades with gold in-game. They're actually pretty cheap. That said, they're time-gated if you're buying them with gold. But just simply go to any stable master and you can spend gold to increase the speed of your... Actually, technically, it's your character.
Yes.
While they're mounted. It's not the mount itself. And that is per character, so each character needs to train. But, it'll help.
Yeah.
Also, I wouldn't buy the inventory or bank upgrades immediately because you'll get your first upgrade for both of those as you level... I think it's like level 5 and level 7. So again, that's stuff that you'll get, and don't spend money on that. Don't spend real money on that until you're looking at the gold prices and you're like, I can never get there.
Yeah, I don't buy many of the upgrades from the store myself. So if anyone just wants personal background, I usually just do it all through the in-game gold system. Let's see. I don't know if we, I mean, people, I hope they know sky shards are a great way to get some extra skill points as you're going through the world. Those are things that every time you collect three of them, you actually get a skill point. So you're kind of like educating your character by collecting that like power from them. So that's something to look at doing.
One thing I will say with when you're going in your first time, just starting out with the game, do not feel the need to rush. Don't feel the need to grind. Just play through it and experience the game as you go. This is not a game where the fun part starts at end game or starts at level cap. You've got a ways to get there. And as you progress, your character will actually make, you'll be expected to be doing more work as the player on a skill level. So take some time as you're progressing and pay attention to what's happening around you, especially what the enemies are doing, and learn to try to avoid what they're doing to you. And pay attention, basically.
I'm really...
This is something at end game that's really skill-based.
Yes, this game is very skill-based. It's not like a... It's not... a slow paced combat system. I like what you're saying. End game, I like to tell people on Twitch, end game starts as soon as the tutorial ends. Really, you are able to go and do almost everything in the game right away. And in fact, I find more people are, they don't realize that they are yet. Like, it takes an outsider to see it. But what's happening is they're actually more paralyzed by indecision than they are like lost for things to do next. They just don't know where to go, because if you like to level through PvP, well, you can go do that at level 10. Level 10, that's it. Battlegrounds open up for you. So you could start queuing to go into Battlegrounds with your friends, which are four person versus four person versus four person PvP matches. So you could go do that at level 10. You can go do open world PvP at level 10. So that could be going to Cyrodiil and doing massive like castle siege type gameplay where you're fighting people in large open fields.
Start running dungeons at level 10.
Exactly. You can start using that dungeon finder. It's always better, take a friend if you can through the dungeon finder, because it can make the queuing process a little bit faster so you can get into things. Also, it should be noted, leveling as a tank through combat can be pretty grueling. So that's something I think you and I may touch on later, but it's a good first new player tip. It is fine if you want to level through being a tank, but I would recommend you do that by queuing for dungeons. Tanks will have to actually queue much faster through dungeons. Healers can do a pretty substantial bit of damage out in the field, but not as much as a full-on DPS class, someone that's actually fully built to deal damage. They're going to have the easiest time soloing combat. And it should be noted that at about level 45, and again, no rush for this, you're fine to take your time, and I encourage you to smell the roses along the way, but at near the level cap, they actually give you free respec scrolls, so don't worry about like... Also, is there a way to pay for respecs off the Crown Store?
There is. That's something else I'd avoid. Yeah, don't do that.
You can do it in-game. And what? The price is like based on how many skill points you have.
Yeah, it's based on the number you spent.
Oh, that. Oh, okay.
It's, I think with attributes, it's 50 per attribute. And then, it might be 500 per attribute. And then I think it's 50 per skill point.
Got
and it. You can respec. So you can respec your morphs by themselves, which will be a much cheaper bill. It's still 50. Mm-hmm. You can respec all your skill points. And this will actually bring up an interface where you can pull stuff out and put it in where you want it, but it will count as respeccing all those skills.
Yep.
And then there's also, you can respec your attributes. So that's actually, those are all separate. And yeah, it sounds like the price stacks up a bit, but when you're actually running around at level cap, it's pretty cheap.
It is. You're very right. It's nice. They give you a little, like, it's cheaper because if you have less of the points, you know, in the early stages. One piece of personal advice, and this is strictly my opinion advice, not everyone would necessarily agree with this, but when I was very new, I did respec my character a couple times because I was like, oh no, I spent that one skill point in the wrong place. Because when you're leveling, you can feel like you're in a skill point drought. But what actually happens is you start to realize over time you actually collect those skill points quickly. So it's probably not even, if it's only one skill point you're respecing, save that gold. You're going to get it in, you know, probably 30 minutes of gameplay or less, another skill point, you know, depending on what content you're running.
Yeah, and take this with a grain of salt because I'm doing this from memory, but I believe there's 418 skill points available currently. That is
that's
far
gonna
more
go
than
up.
We need.
That's going to go up.
Yeah, it's
real,
going up.
Yeah,
it's going to go up by another 6 for the Sky Shards and then 2 for the public dungeons and probably another 6 for the quest line.
Wow.
So, so another 15 total, I guess.
That's
14 total.
That brings up a great point of something we should mention as well. One character in the game has almost enough or they'll have enough now, I think, with Elsewhere to get all of the passives and skill points in the game, I believe. If not all of them, almost all the ones, especially the ones you're going to care about.
Well, yeah, you can already just buy all of the ones you care about, including all the crafting. Like that's entirely doable right now.
Right. And so we should probably elaborate on that for a second. And what I want to say is a lot of people will be scared. They'll look at, I've got 3 class lines that have active abilities and they have passives. Then there are things like the Thieves Guild has passives, the Dark Brotherhood being a vampire or a werewolf has passives, Mages Guild, Fighters Guild, crafting skill lines. It's a lot of skill points when you look at it first and you go, oh my gosh, my character's not going to be able to do everything. Turns out you can, but it also can be more beneficial at sometimes that you have 2 different characters. Like you might want to have a sneaky stabby dude that's more into the Dark Brotherhood stuff than another character who's maybe your primary crafter or something like that. So it's all, again, very forgivable styles of play that if you have things split up between different characters, that's okay. If you want to try and do it all on one, that is okay. It's just going to be a lot more dedication to one tune.
Well, that reminds me of one of the things though. If you're picking a dedicated crafter from the beginning, make sure it's one character that's doing all 6 or 7 skill lines, because the way the furnishing system, which we'll get into further down the line, works, you do want to make sure that that one actually crosses over between skill lines. So if you're going to make a crafter, make it one crafter. And also, especially, even if you want to split up some of them, you do not want to split your equipment crafting up between different characters. So that's your woodworking, your blacksmithing, and your clothier.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is you collect motifs for those. And the motifs are per character. So you pick up the motif on a character. Only that character knows that motif and can craft in that motif. If you've got the option, make your crafter an Imperial, because the Imperial motif is actually very difficult to obtain. And the other racial motifs are pretty easy.
Yeah.
The other thing along those lines is when you're doing this, as you're finding recipes, as you're finding furnishing recipes, just consolidate that all on a single character and focus on them. And there are absolutely enough skill points in the game to be able to have a character like that, that you can then also run content with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're crippling this character, and it's not like you're forced to only do it with this one skill line or with this one, one skill line per character. That's not what happens here.
That is a great piece of advice there.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, what you don't want to do. So what I did, everyone, is I have my first character is one that I very rarely play in an actual combat sense, but I still log into him every day, about a year later, because he is my primary crafter. So I'm just not interested in his combat anymore, but he is luckily the person that learned all my recipes, all my motifs, all of that stuff. So when I need anything made, I know which character has it. What you don't want to do is start splitting those recipes. Like Stark said, that is a quick path to a big headache, being like, I forget 2 years later, I forget which character knows this thing and the other one knows that thing. Like, don't just take that quick piece of advice from Stark.
Yeah.
Anything else? Because we're getting pretty close to the end here of the episode. I really like that we kind of like threw out some very beginner pitfall sort of things that people can be curious or worried about. Anything else you tell new players?
I think we're leaving in a pretty good state going into the second episode that we recorded months ago and can't remember.
Yeah, don't judge us if you move on to if you like our chemistry in this one and then go, what the hell? How'd these people get worse at the next episode? Just know that if you're listening, this is episode 1. This was recorded close to a year later or something like that, 6 months plus later. So I'm just going to say, I reiterate, go into the game, explore it, see what aspects of it you enjoy and really play through with those. Take your time. Don't fall. Oh, a last one. Don't fall for the grinding thing. Don't run dolmens.
Do yeah.
Dolmens are a way you might see on the internet of people saying, run dolmens, get to max level. I would say this is a beautiful game with thousands and thousands of playtime hours available to you. Don't destroy the magic by doing this very boring, like, circuit of content that's just mind-numbing and will put you in physical agony eventually. So I would say go out there, have fun, meet friends, join guilds. You can be at 5 guilds at a time. Like I said, we'll have a link to that below. Check out our Discord server. We actually just got partnered today on Discord, so I have a vanity link I can share out here now. Give me 2 seconds. It is discord.gg/KDS. That will get you into the Discord there. Super helpful people in the guild. Come by the Twitch stream. There are so many of the devs hanging out with us. Like we talked about, we had an interview with Rich Lambert and Mike Finnegan, and they'll stop by the stream. Rich is there like every day hanging out. So if you have like, if you want to see how dedicated these devs are to the game, they come home from work and they play it for like another 4 hours after working on it, 8+ hours a day. So you are in good hands in this community and in this game in general. And that's another thing to say is hang out with the people you enjoy hanging out with. If anyone's giving you a hard time, walk away from that group. If anyone's telling you in like a negative way how you should or shouldn't be playing the game, if they're telling you, you know, you're not doing it right, those aren't the right people to play with. This is a world of wonder, so dive headlong into it. Okay, everybody, I think that does it for this week. Check out the links below. Reminder, May 20th is the 24-hour subathon. That is the release, the pre-release of Elsweyr. So join us. We're starting that at noon Eastern time. Is that 9 a.m. Pacific then? 3 hours minus? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And drops will be enabled. That's a whole other conversation. I'll save that for another day. But if you, for those that are listening to this is episode 35, you know what that means. That means there's a chance to get free in-game crates by just coming by and watching the Twitch stream. So come do that. Tons of giveaways for new players. There's going to be things that help you out if you're in there for the giveaways. That'll be very fancy. And you can get some things that you can link to your account, like in-game goodies. We'll leave him here, Stark. We'll leave him on the way out. Twitch is twitch.tv/KyleDempsterStudios. I'm at twitter.com/KyleDempsterStU. And Stark, you're at twitter.com/MichaelJSchwartz. Okay, you wonderful human beings. Go forth and enjoy Tamriel. Until next week, bye-bye.
Take care.